Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, last time we spoke on this podcast, we had loads and loads of stories that we were looking forward to, none of which seem to be relevant anymore, Catherine, including the one that I was hyping up and ended after about 3 hours, i.e. Naomi Osaka. In fact, I called the podcast the Osaka Olympics, and then she lost in straight sets about 4 hours later. It's been a funny old Olympics, hasn't it? I mean, there's still lots of interesting people left and huge moments in their careers, could be kind of career-defining moments for about six people, but none of the storylines that I think I would have anticipated are happening, apart from Novak Djokovic.
Yeah, I mean, full disclosure, I've found this Olympic tennis tournament a bit of a letdown so far. I'm very invested in the Novak Djokovic story because it has significance beyond man wins Olympic gold, which, look, everybody knows what an Olympic fan I am. I'm very invested in men and women winning Olympic gold everywhere. But I'm, you know, I'm searching for reasons to care more than just your standard. Reasons, context, things that elevate it into increased significance. And beyond Djokovic in the draw that we've got left, I'm struggling a little bit. And that's not to say that there aren't lovely little stories and I'm not pleased on a personal level for lots of different players and teams. I really am. I can see the joy, what it means to them. I am so into that in the way that I'm into that generally in the Olympics. But I really wanted some of those storylines that we spoke about a few days ago. I really did some of them. I mean, I obviously got far too invested at far too early a stage in so many of them. But I was so into Muguruza and Suarez Navarro and Murray and Salisbury and Tsitsipas and Sakkari, even though they're rubbish.
Basically, whenever Catherine has come up with a name for a doubles team, they've lost about 6 hours later.
Yeah, I should say brilliant name.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm worried for Mathrin, which...
Hannah came up with Hannah that, so we're fine. Oh, I came okay. up with, oh, I've already forgotten it. That's how distant a memory it is. What did I come up with?
Maritsipas,
which...
Oh, that's very good, actually.
Rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, and...
Navarruza.
These are actually... I hate these things normally, but actually you've done a really, really good job with that.
Yeah, they're all irrelevant now, though.
Yeah, but I'm just wondering whether they might be reusable in some way.
I don't think Maritsipas will be.
No, and Suarez Navarro and Muguruza, definitely not.
Maritsipas has surely got a future somewhere down the line. They're too close. They're too friendly.
I think the other thing is that it's not just that these stories didn't come to fruition. It's that even when they were happening... Okay, I might just be talking about Maritsipas here. They weren't quite as electric and fun as I was expecting.
Is it the crowd?
Think it's massive. I really think it's massive. And we were talking on WhatsApp earlier, weren't we, Matt, about why you know, we've had a lot of time to get used to not having a crowd. We've had Grand Slams without crowds. Why are we feeling it so much, especially when we're experiencing all sport without crowd at the moment, and we're feeling it more in the tennis than in others? And I think you've done the best job of any of us of trying to articulate and explain and put your finger on why that is.
Oh, yeah. Do tell me that, because I was busy trying to load a skip at the time. So I did miss a few hours.
Well, I think I totally agree with everything you've said about this tournament and how you're feeling about this tournament. And I'm just trying to put my finger on why that is. And I think lack of crowds is a huge part of it. And I think part of the reason that that's feeling different this time around is because when we had no crowds before, we didn't have Wimbledon 2 weeks earlier to compare it to. We were thrust into new crowds, and it was something to just get used to. It feels like a bump back down, the lack of crowds, to me, coming off the back, especially of Wimbledon, but also the tournaments we had throughout the spring and the early part of the summer. We were building up all the time, and now we've just come back down. I think there haven't been very good matches. I think that is, you know, just in simple terms, when we look back at the end of the year and we're trying to rack our brains for the best matches of this tennis season, none of the ones that we've seen at this Olympics so far will come to mind. We will gloss over them in terms of matches. I think there can still be some good stories, as you've said, but matches-wise, something needs to happen. I feel slightly less invested or slightly more detached from this tennis event than I have tennis events recently. That could be because we're not doing dailies, and maybe over the next few days that will really pick up on a personal level. I think it's also just the sheer amount of other sport that's on, which has been gripping. That takes a bit of attention away from the tennis.
But that was the case in Rio.
Yeah, oh, totally, totally.
Mm. Time difference was a bit better there, though, wasn't it?
All of these things are combining, I think.
Yeah, heat.
The heat is huge,
I think. The heat is affecting the matches, I think. And,
yeah, definitely.
And making
everyone
them
looks
bad.
Knackered. Everyone looks like they're almost in slow motion.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, and just as well, I've really noticed I've not been hearing from players that much. I don't get a sense of what this story really means to Pablo Carreño Busta. And maybe that's me. Maybe I've missed it. But normally I'm really on top of those sorts of things, and it doesn't feel like I am.
Is that the lack also of the formal press conference? You know, they have the mixed zone here, don't they, where players walk through, and I think there's definitely something to be said for the mixed zone, and what that is just a route that the players are directed back from a tennis court to the locker room via an area where the media can gather and talk to them outside, usually on their way, and they can stop if they want, or they don't have to. I know Osaka initially didn't stop, or she exited a different route and then came back and actually did a couple of questions with the media, but it's often very, very short and sweet. You don't seem to get necessarily an official transcript. I haven't really seen official transcripts anyway. And it does, I think, yeah, it isn't easy actually to pinpoint where everything is being said, if it is being said.
Yeah. And I also think these were weaker fields. I mean, the men's in particular was a weaker field. And I think I perhaps thought, oh, well, there's still enough good players in this draw. But it doesn't take much for a draw to fall apart a little bit if some really star players go out and it's a weaker field. And, you know, we've been so used to the big events in tennis having all of the players there. And I think when they're not there, it has had an impact on how the tournament feels, perhaps, and some of the matches we've had in these last few days. Yeah, I just think all of these things combining have meant, as you said, that it's been a slightly disappointing tennis event. It could still pick up. There's still medals to be played for, and those probably will be the bits we will remember if they're great from this tournament. But let's hope it does for our sakes and our listeners' sakes. We've got 3 more podcasts.
the other thing we've
talk about canoe slalom in all of them.
Yeah. The other thing that we've got at the moment is, I think, a real struggle from a lot of our listeners. We've been written to by quite a few people struggling to even find the tennis. We've been posting Matt's magnificent plan for Olympics watching every day on our social media, and a lot of people are saying, well, that all sounds great, but how can I see all this? I've got the BBC if I'm in the UK. Maybe you've got Eurosport, and they've got the two main channels. Catherine's on Eurosport 1, working on that, and they've got a second one which they advertise as being for younger sports or newer sports, like 3-on-3 basketball or skateboarding, etc. But then they've got 6 or 7 of these pop-up channels, which takes some finding, I have to say. You really, on the Sky Planner, you really have to scroll if you want to go and find those things, or you have to know they're there. But there's one dedicated to tennis, there's one dedicated to volleyball, my wife loves that, my son's really into the handball one and the hockey and things like that, but they're a bit out of the way. But even on the tennis dedicated channel, you can only have one match on at a time, and there's often 4 or 5, 6, 7 going on all at the same time. Now, all of them are accessible on the Eurosport Player, which we've taken a subscription out on. And they're also available on the new service, Discovery Plus, which Discovery, who own Eurosport, and who own all the rights in many, many countries within Europe, have started streaming literally all the tennis on. And I mean, I think it's a really good service. I've enjoyed using that. But a lot of people do not have it or do not know about it. And that's going to be a learning process. I think in the US, there's something similar with NBC having the main rights. And then there's their streaming service, Peacock, which has something similar going on. But I think that kind of feeling, certainly I'd say on my Twitter timeline, of communal watching with everybody else that I know, or everybody else that's in my sort of world or that I'm interested in hearing about, people aren't necessarily all talking about the tennis, which is what we're used to. I suppose that's, as you say, not necessarily that different to any other Olympics, but I think the stories, Djokovic aside, now are, well, they're low-key, aren't they? They're not everybody watching Andy Murray all at the same time, or everybody watching Serena Williams. So
they're very localised, aren't they? Very localised. It will be absolutely lovely and special and heartwarming for either Belinda Bencic or Markéta Vondrousova to win gold. I mean, already it's heartwarming what it means to them individually to win medals. But it's a struggle to find greater significance in that. I don't think, unless something extraordinary happens in the final, I don't expect anything that plays out to kind of generally affect my view of either player. If you know Vondrousova is a Grand Slam finalist whose career seems destined to always be completely unpredictable and unfathomable, and Belinda Bencic is, you know, if you'd asked me, does she have gold medal winning talent, I'd have said, yeah, probably, yeah. She's a really, really great tennis player that probably on balance won't win a Grand Slam. But, you know, a gold medal would be the pinnacle of a really, really good career. And those are good little stories, but finding greater significance in them is a bit of a struggle.
They also don't bring in the casual sports fan to watch them with us tennis fans, I think. Whereas I'm drawn into some of the other sports, and I wonder whether that is the case. I wonder whether there are people that just happen upon Belinda Bencic's matches from outside, the way I'm sort of taking an interest in certain other sports. I just don't know. I get the sense that that's not happening. But what I also feel is that now that Novak Djokovic and a few of the other players have campaigned hard for the times of the matches to change, and they have now been pushed back, obviously a little easier to do that when there are few of the matches, but in order to avoid the heat of the day, they are now in our time zone, certainly here in the UK, 7 in the morning, it's easy enough to get up and watch these matches. I think for the next 3 days, I don't think daily podcasts will be a problem, because I'm going to be really invested in a lot of these gold medal matches and some of the bronze medal ones as well. I mean, in our house, I'm married to a Croatian and my kids are half Croatian. They are absolutely pumped about the all-Croatian doubles final, I'm telling you. And we've just been debating who we're going to cheer for. But you know, I can see myself being interested in these matches, but I do understand that I'm a niche audience. You know, I'm a tennis nut, so it's not the same.
You were a man that was yesterday telling us about the very much out of the spotlight career in the 90s of Emma Raducanu's new coach.
Yes.
That you knew intimately.
Well, yeah. I
creepily was, intimately.
Andrew Richardson, who is going to be her coach for the tournament, in fact, that's taking place next week in San Jose. And she's got a wild card, and he is, well, he's a year younger than me. I think he's 46, and in the mid-90s, he had an incredible performance at a Davis Cup tie when Hemman and Rozetsky were injured, and he was 6'7", great backhand, really.
Are you just reading our WhatsApp chat from yesterday?
I'm just, well, you started it. I'm just
the second consecutive day
letting everybody in.
I heard the bio of Andrew Richards.
It'll be very interesting to know, well, what sort of coach he ends up being, because I mean, I know he has coached for a long time, but I haven't seen him at this level, you know, with a very bright young player who's expected to do a lot. I know that he's worked with her since her younger days. But, yeah, that was quite a surprise to me, especially as she'd been coached by Nigel Sears at Wimbledon, and he's vastly experienced and she'd obviously had success there. But anyway, we'll see, won't we?
While we're on coaching news, should we just do Bianca Andreescu quickly?
Yes. Well, is that official? I mean, I know there's a report out by Stephanie Mars, isn't there, the Canadian journalist, who says that Sven Groeneveld looks like he's working with Bianca Andreescu, former coach of Maria Sharapova. And it's, how long is it since she split with her longtime coach? Was that Sylvain
Bruno?
Sylvain Bruno.
A couple of months,
yeah. She certainly played Wimbledon without a coach, or certainly without Sylvain with her. I'm trying to remember if that was the case at the French Open as well. She lost in Berlin, didn't she, to Elisa Cornet, and that was on her birthday, and right. That was when the band piped up. And I mean, that was the sort of experience which might make you want to change everything about your life. I don't want to see anyone involved in today ever again. Sorry, you're sacked.
A couple of people who didn't look best pleased were the aforementioned Naomi Osaka, who somehow lost to Markéta Vondrousova, despite me saying that there was no chance of that happening in the last podcast. Well, it very much did happen. Did anybody see that match? Because I have to say I didn't.
Yeah, I saw some of it, and I said on the last podcast I was surprised by the lack of rust in Osaka's game, and I sort of just assumed she was then going to be on this sort of unstoppable path to Olympic gold.
Me too.
But clearly that was naive, and I think all the rust came out in this game, and look, it wasn't a particularly good performance. It was indoors, which I think really slowed the conditions down, and she actually had real trouble hitting through Vondrousova, just things you wouldn't expect from Naomi Osaka. Yeah, and look, she said she was actually pretty pleased to have won a couple of rounds because she hadn't competed for over 50 days. I think she probably had better perspective on her game than I did, and she wasn't shocked, I don't think, that she played like that. But obviously it's a disappointment. But that was obviously the first time I really paid attention to Vondrousova in this tournament. You know, she actually got in via a slightly obscure rule.
I'm very interested in this. This might be the story that I'm desperately searching for. Am I searching in the wrong place, Matt?
Well, I don't believe, you know, she's done anything wrong or anything like that. She has taken advantage of a rule that allows her to use, I think, a protected ranking from 2019. When she had some time out.
My understanding of it is the following, and I've made notes because it's complicated. When the qualifying deadline came down last month for the Olympics, Vondrousova was on the wrong side of the cutoff, because obviously there were so many highly ranked Czech players.
Yes, it was the top four, and it was Krejčíková, Pliskova, Kvitova, and Muchová.
And Muchová. And because of that, Vondrousova opted to use her protected ranking, which was apparently still available to her from a wrist injury she had pre-pandemic, and she had a subsequent surgery on it. So she biffed off Muchová and boarded a plane to Tokyo.
Oh, yeah. Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, and I do. I mean, yeah, it's completely legit, and my goodness me, she made the most of that opportunity.
Yeah.
But I'm very much up for when they next play one another. I'd love to know what Muchová thinks about all of that. I mean, yeah, extraordinary.
Catherine just eyeing aggro potential there.
It's been a lean week, David.
Yeah, well, you've been searching high and low. I noticed no context. Daniil Medvedev was getting an airing on Twitter today.
Yes.
He's out, Daniil, by the way, isn't he?
Daniil Medvedev has provided odd moments of amusement this week, and for that I am grateful. But he's gone now.
Did he lose to... He lost to Khachanov, did he?
No,
Karenia Buster.
He lost to Karenia Buster. He didn't have a good time in Tokyo, Medvedev.
No, he threatened to die mid-match.
He loathed the conditions and made that very clear. Yeah. And actually had a couple of good wins in those conditions over Bublik and Fanini. And then today against Karenia Buster, he was not good. And
he looked underpowered. He looked really like, you know, on a computer game when you're energy is low. That's what he looked like.
Oh, right.
Me.
I mean, I only see that on clay normally, you know, that feeling.
And that no context Medvedev thing you referenced, David, was when he put his hands over his face and apparently said that it was as though Krenia Buster was just hitting the ball with his eyes closed and it was going in. And he's never seen him play like that before.
What is it about Karina Buster that winds so many
people? He really does wind people up, doesn't he?
Kyrgios had a go at him on Twitter saying that he's only got his ranking because of clay, which is utter nonsense.
Total nonsense.
I mean, even if true, that's like, oh, you've only got your ranking because of hard courts.
Yeah, like, perfectly what? Legitimate,
I mean,
thing.
That's a massive portion of the season. Anyway, yeah, Medvedev had a terrible time.
Yes. Is Karina Buster the player at your local club who beats everybody even though they all think that they're better than him?
Yeah.
Is it that?
Definitely.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Right. Definitely.
Okay.
Well, I mean, he's having a great time. He won Hamburg, didn't he? I mean, I know that's always a weakened field and he took advantage of that, but that was his biggest title ever, I think, and now he's gone and carried that form onto the hard courts in Tokyo. Yeah.
He doesn't seem to sweat very much, which feels like a superpower, particularly in Tokyo. Yeah.
And he's facing Khachanov now, isn't he?
Medvedev sweated enough for both of them.
Sure did.
Just to give you the visual there.
Lovely. Who did Khachanov beat then?
Hugo Humbert.
Oh, yes. Who had beaten Tsitsipas. So I'd have probably thought, I mean, basically, whoever I thought was going to win any match, the opposite happened.
Djokovic aside.
Yeah, I thought.
Although actually, you thought Djokovic was going to be troubled by
tough draw,
Struff and Musetti that didn't even win through to playing Djokovic.
He didn't even win a set in the whole Olympics. So we can, I mean, look, it sounded quite dramatic at the time, at least the way I put it. You know, just trying to keep people with us, you know.
Now unlike this podcast, which is definitely not keeping people with us for the remaining daily shows.
I must say, Djokovic today, I watched that against Nishikori. He was unbelievable. You know, at Wimbledon, how we said we never actually felt like he really hit his top gear and he won that tournament anyway. Today, he was swinging freely. He just destroyed Nishikori. 6-2, 6-love. And I know that is a terrible matchup. There's not a single thing that Nishikori does better than Novak Djokovic, I don't think, on a tennis court. And every strength he has, Novak Djokovic has it times a significant factor. But that doesn't stop the fact that Djokovic was so good today. You know, and I think what's interesting is he's taken a real grip on this tennis season during the clay and grass court season. And look, I know he's a six-time Wimbledon champion now. He's very, very good on grass, but he's still better on hard courts. We're actually now back in Novak Djokovic's territory. He's sort of been away from home and won everything, and now he's back on his preferred surface, and he just looks completely unstoppable.
And I also think there is an element of, because of the conditions, and as you say, David, players have looked completely shot this week. I mean, really on their last legs. I think he's, you know, because obviously this is part of a wider journey for Novak Djokovic, this journey to Tokyo. I think because of the conditions in particular, he hates these conditions as much as everybody, but it's made him just go into sort of hunker down mode of, I cannot afford to expend any extraneous energy here. I can't be faffing around.
He's so alert,
draining
so sharp
energy that I will need for the US Open and beyond. It's completely no muss, no fuss tennis from what I've seen. And he's on for double gold.
Yeah, because he's in the mixed doubles. Is it semis?
Yes.
Semi-final, yeah, which means they're guaranteed to play for a medal, him and Nino Stojanovic.
By the way, I did come across the most Kei Nishikori stat of all time.
Go ahead.
That he's the only man in history to reach three consecutive Olympics quarterfinals.
And no further.
He has got a bronze medal at the Olympics.
Oh, okay.
But,
right.
I mean, that is very Nishikori, isn't it?
It's very Nishikori. Can I share another disappointment just to keep those listeners with us?
Keep them coming, Catherine.
Osaka and Nishikori not playing mixed together.
Yeah, what's all that about?
Missed
opportunity.
I was really gutted. Really gutted. Trying to get into the mind and speculate about the mind of Naomi Osaka at the moment is probably neither appropriate nor possible, really. But I have watched her Netflix documentary, and I don't think it's a brilliant documentary, in all honesty. The sort of the one thing I took from it was I just wanted to have some fun. I wanted to enjoy tennis and have a bit of fun. And I know fun means different things for different people. I'm sure my definition of fun is very different to that of Stefanos Tsitsipas. But I just feel like teaming up with Nishikori could have been a way to bear that burden of representing Japan and being the face of the Olympics and share it with somebody. And I know Nishikori hasn't experienced the weight of the pressure like she has, but he's experienced a bit of it. And okay, he's not the poster boy for fun times, but he's got his way about him, hasn't he? He did the penguin line. I feel like it just would have been nice and maybe a bit of fun, although I thought Maritsipas was going to be fun, and that was a fun-free zone. So maybe they knew something
again?
I didn't.
What was the penguin?
When he grew up, he wanted to be a penguin.
That's brilliant. I did love that. Can I give you another Nishikori line? Which I don't get this. In his rivalry, in inverted commas, with Novak Djokovic.
Oh, well, this is already a defunct sentence, David.
Kei Nishikori won two of their first three meetings, right? Including 6-4, 1-6, 7-6, 6-3 in the US Open semi-finals in 2014. When Djokovic was a version of Djokovic by then, he's already won multiple Grand Slam titles. And I remember watching that and thinking that Nishikori was stunning how good he was. He played Djokovic at his own game and beat him.
Do you know what that makes me think of, though? Gasquet beating Federer in Monte Carlo.
I suppose, yeah. But, you know, that's a big win. That's a Grand Slam, for goodness sake. A semi-final, and it's four sets, and he's just beaten the guy. And if somebody had told me then that he, over the next 7 years, he would subsequently lose 15 matches in a row against the guy, which is what's happened, or maybe it's 14, but there's a couple of walkovers and whatever in there. But, you know, the head-to-head is 16-2, despite him winning two of the first three. I totally understand now. I mean, look, Djokovic now is a better player than at any point in his whole career, in my view, in terms of understanding what his game is all about and what it does to other people. But I'm still surprised that he's accelerated away from Nishikori to that degree from where we were in 2014. Anyway.
Mm.
If only Nishikori had a mixed doubles run with Naomi Osaka to cling on to.
Yeah.
Can I just say, I don't think we appreciated enough the phrase, not the poster boy for fun times. I was really excited about how you were going to deal with that elephant in the room. And you put it beautifully.
To my knowledge, he might be just very much on the quiet, a fun time Charlie. I don't know.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Talking of people of that description, Stefanos Tsitsipas beaten by Hugo Humbert, and he hurt his knee. Matt, do we have wider worries about Tsitsipas?
I'm not totally sure what body part it was. It looked like his knee, but then he seemed to be flexing out his ankle. It was certainly the lower half of his leg. It was on the set point in the second set. It did worry me because it was innocuous in the way that the Simona Halep one in Rome was innocuous, and then suddenly he seemed to be in quite a lot of pain. He didn't get up for quite a few minutes. Was helped to the chair. And he looked really unsettled in the third set against Humbert. Like, he just didn't trust it. He didn't want to properly commit to those, you know, that very dynamic movement that he has when he's at his best. And he therefore lost. And, you know, I think he's since played two mixed doubles matches. So hopefully the injury is not actually too bad. I suspect if it was bad, he would have pulled out of the mixed doubles. But he's in a tough spot at the moment, is Tsitsipas. I think, you know, since losing that Roland Garros final, he's really struggled for the form he had and the spark he had earlier on in the year. He's obviously had a family bereavement as well, and he's just in a bit of a tough spot. He isn't getting the results. He's lost to Tiafoe, Krajinovic and Humbert, I think, in his last three tournaments, and those are players who at his best, and certainly at the beginning of the year, I would kind of expect him to just handle. So this is a real test, I think, for Tsitsipas at the moment. And he sort of looks like he just maybe needs a bit of time off in a way. It's kind of just been pretty relentless.
I think he plays too much. I really do. He plays some events that I don't understand. And I think his US Open will be interesting because it's where we had his meltdown against Borna Coric, isn't it, last year? And I felt there was, yes, okay, there may have been a physical issue and Umber's a good player, but I felt there was a bit of that in this match as well, really. Zverev, though, he looks solid as a rock right now. And I wonder whether he's probably the biggest threat to Djokovic, I would have thought. I mean, he's his next opponent, isn't he, in the semifinals. And Djokovic has got a great record against him, but I think that that could be interesting.
Not many that Djokovic doesn't have a great record against.
No. I mean, look, I'd still back Djokovic to win the thing against whoever you put up against.
I'm very wary of, after the last podcast, making predictions that could already be out of date by the time people are listening. But I find it very hard to see anybody challenging him in any meaningful way.
Mm. Yes, the move back of the times has been helpful for the players and also our podcast. It's given us an extra 3 hours of credibility.
It can go the other way, Matt, though, because if these things bear out, then we look great.
I do think Croatians are going to win the men's doubles. That is a prediction that I
so
will
stand by. Is it
going to
be Nikola Mektić and Mate Pavic or Marin Cilic and Ivan Dodig, who rescued their match from a set down against Andy Murray and Joe Salisbury? I mean, it was really something the way that turned. I mean, what was your reading on that match?
Well, I was really gutted because that was a story that I was very invested in, and I think is it okay to be a little bit not impartial during the Olympics when they're representing GB? Anyway, I've done it now.
So we're
down that road. And you know, this is going to be Andy Murray's last Olympics, and he has given so much, not just for GB at the Olympics, but for tennis at the Olympics. I think the way that he's committed to it and valued it has been important to tennis at the Olympics. And I don't think the thigh strain he had was anything massively significant. I think he thought, I can win a gold in the doubles with Joe Salisbury. I think after that win in the first round over Mahubert, I think he thought, right, this is realistically my best shot here, so let's focus everything on that. And they were really good together, really good together. And Joe Salisbury doesn't seem to sweat. He seems, he might be a robot of some sort. He doesn't seem to be troubled, despite being from England, doesn't seem to be troubled by the conditions at all. And Andy Murray's just so in the zone, just like an animal bit between his teeth. And they were setting a break up over Cilic and Dodig. And I mean, doubles in that format, they've introduced the match tiebreak in lieu of a third set for the first time at this Olympics. It is a total lottery. Total lottery.
But it still turned dramatically.
It did. Murray's serving fell apart towards the end. And we haven't heard from them, so I don't really know. I know that I could see how gutted they were, and I can definitely tell you how gutted I was.
Wasn't this a Cilic injection of what he's capable of when he's not racked with fear and nerves?
All right, Croatian correspondent David, who picked the wrong time to be very Croatian on our WhatsApp chat.
I know, I got banished.
Yeah.
It all got a bit frosty.
Place and time.
It was a cold environment for a few hours.
I muted the chat for about 4 hours.
Good.
My kids were loving the result.
They're from the same town, aren't they, Cilic and Dodig, in Bosnia?
Mm. Yes.
I'm clinging to stories here.
Yes, I'd have to check that, so I don't know.
I've read that from a reputable source.
You have? Okay. Mm. Anyway, good for them. They're in the final. But it's I am surprised. I thought Murray and Salisbury looked a really good team, and this doesn't mean that they're not a good team. It's just it can happen, can't it? In that format, you only need a good spell in a match and a rocky one on the other side, and that's it. And I think that's what happened, really. Mm. The last remaining British player was Liam Brody, who had a brilliant week, really. He came in as a late replacement for Dan Evans, beat Hubert Hurkacz. That is the best win of his career. He was fantastic. He fought his heart out against Jeremy Shardy as well, and eventually lost out in three sets. But Brody makes me feel like things can happen if you have the right attitude. He's the sort of player, him and Norrie, from a British perspective, are the sort of people that I am inspired by, because they are limited, and yet here they are achieving.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. He was a joy to watch this week. And I'm really chuffed for Liam Brody. Unfortunately, this is a testament to him that he still made the commitment, but it ultimately means nothing for him, does it? Because no ranking points. He's had the best win of his career, and that fact is more significant for lower ranked players. It doesn't matter to Djokovic that he's not getting any ranking points for what he's doing at the Olympics. He's got plenty of ranking points in the bag, but Liam Brody could damn well do with some ranking points for this week, but he's still fought his heart out in the most ghastly conditions and had the biggest win of his career, the biggest run of his career, really, and that's just brilliant. Mm.
And I did think there was something, yes, cruel that it happened when he's not getting ranking points and he's not getting prize money for this. You know, it was also sort of perfect, because the Olympics is all about the love of the sport and competing, which he loves doing. That's what's kept him going through that grind of the professional tour, being ranked outside the top 100. And then I also wondered whether something about playing without that pressure of ranking points and without that pressure of, okay, I need to win this to get this amount of money, which will take me to the next place on the tour, might have liberated him and might have kind of showed what is possible for those lower ranked players when they're not thinking about just survival on the tennis tour and they're able to express themselves and play their games. He played brilliantly against Hubert Hurkacz. You know, it was the biggest win of his career by ranking. It was the best I've seen him play, I think, as well. You know, his tennis was really, really good. And it did feel like someone who was uninhibited by that usual grind and just loving being there. And, you know, that is a feeling that the top players get and have obviously earned by just how good they are, but you know, they don't have those worries on a week-to-week basis. They can play tennis, but for someone like Liam Brody, this was sort of his only real shot at being able to do that. And yeah, it was special that he took advantage of it.
Yeah, it was. Just a quick one on the scheduling change. We saw a harrowing sight of Paula Badosa from Spain, who, obviously, I picked for the title about half an hour before she, poor woman, collapsed in a heap in the heat. But she struggled horribly out there. I wouldn't have necessarily anticipated that as somebody who has played a lot of hot weather tennis, but this feels like heat that these players don't always encounter. This feels different to me from everything that just the sight of Zverev and in his match before the Shardy one, I was watching him. They look almost a little delirious, as though they can't quite see straight in that degree of heat.
Yeah, well, Medvedev went up to the umpire mid-match, I think it was yesterday, and said, complained about the weather, and said, look, we can play the match, but I might die.
And who's going to take responsibility for that?
Yeah, I mean, and look, I really relate to that feeling of someone that struggles in the heat somewhat. and just feeling like it's a claustrophobia. It leads to anxiety and sort of symptoms beyond just the physical impact of being in heat. It can be, and it's not necessarily related to fitness, I don't think.
No,
it can be. I mean, you can mitigate some of the impacts of it through fitness, but I think there is a natural element to it as well. Some people just are. I mean, Joe Salisbury, he's from Putney, doesn't seem to sweat.
Yeah, he goes to the same supermarket as Catherine.
Yeah, I mean, I've never seen him in there, but must have done at some point.
Must have done.
I mean, it looks awful. It looks awful. When I see them sat at the change of ends with those air conditioning hoses on them, I have flashbacks to the 2018 US Open when an auxiliary air conditioning hose had to be installed in the Amazon Prime studio and channeled in my direction.
Catherine gave it a name?
Yes, Nellie.
Nellie.
You saved my life.
There we are. So the only other one I wanted to mention was the player that Bencic beat in her semi-final was, because I watched quite a bit of the first set, and Helena Rybakina was just having it all her own way. She was 5-2 up. She had 6 set points, and she ended up losing the match in 3 sets. I mean, that is a rough loss for her. And actually, Bencic, like Djokovic, could end up doing the double gold at this tournament, because Bencic is playing doubles alongside Victoria Golubic against Barbora Krejčíková and Katerina Siniaková. So there's Switzerland against the Czech Republic in both of the women's singles and the doubles finals. The bronze medal match is Pegossi and Stefani against Kudermatova and Vesnina. I don't think I've come across Pegossi before.
They're from Brazil.
Oh, Stefani, I do know her. Luisa, because she's
Stefani, yeah.
Yeah, she's played alongside Hayley Carter, I seem to recall, in the doubles. Really good doubles player. I'm not surprised that Stefani's done well. So that's happening. And then on the men's side, it is Mektić and Pavic against Cilic and Dorig. I kind of would like to see it for the established doubles pair, in a way.
Mm. I mean, they've teamed up this year for the Olympics.
Yeah.
You know, and okay, they won Wimbledon. Wonderful. It's hard to call it a tough year when you've won Wimbledon. But, you know, they were heavy favourites to win the French Open, and they got withdrawn from the draw because of COVID. So in some ways it has been a challenging year. And yeah, I think it would be, if their celebrations upon winning Wimbledon are anything to go by, I think it would be pretty darn special for them.
I do love seeing an established doubles pair that's at the top of the game playing against a singles player who's got a sort of ceiling that's higher than all of them when he's absolutely on his game. In Marin Cilic. I'm very interested to see how that ends up going.
And I think it doubly motivates the doubles players, isn't it? When they're playing a sort of a singles player that's just deigned to turn their racket to a bit of doubles, you know, because it's the Olympics, I might as well.
Yeah, and of course he was part of the Davis Cup winning team a few years ago, was Marin Cilic, so it'll be very interesting that. And then it is Daniel and Venus against Sandgren and Austin for the bronze medal. And then in the mixed, it's semi-final stages of Rublev and Pavlyuchenkova against Ash Barty and John Peers. Mm. Well, that's really good. I like that.
Mm. Note to John Peers, stop taking Ash Barty's shots. Did happen a few times today, and I think Barty was a little bit pissed off about it as well.
It
was those ones down the middle where Barty would have had a backhand and Peers would have had a forehand. And ordinarily, I think the instinct there is to go with the forehand. But two or three times it happened, Piers missed and Barty was a bit peeved. But yeah, I mean, they are gelling nicely apart from that. And it was great to see how much that meant to Ash Barty beating Maritza Pass today. She uh, She loved that.
Thanks for giving that one last run out, Matt. Appreciate it.
I'm really looking forward to it now because I feel like I can allot some time to actually follow these matches. I don't feel like I found it really difficult with some of them. So that leaves us with tomorrow. It all starts at 3 o'clock local time, which I think is 7 o'clock, is it, in the morning for Great Britain? And it's Karen Khachanov against Pablo Carreño Busta, and then the second men's semi of Djokovic against Zverev. Then the doubles gold medal match in the men's between Mektic and Pavic and Cilic and Dodig. There's the bronze men's doubles match as well that follows that. And then the mixed doubles semis are also on court number one. So loads to look forward to in that. And the second one of those involves Novak Djokovic, of course, because it is Djokovic and Stojanovic against Vesnina and Karatsev. So that's another couple of cracking mixed doubles teams. Really, really looking forward to seeing all of that, to be quite honest. So I think that that's about it for this edition of the Tennis Podcast. As we said, we're going to be back every day until the end of the Olympics. So we'll be back with you again tomorrow night. We are brought to you by our very lovely mascots, Rogue for me, Scouse or Mousel for Matt, Zeus for Catherine, and Billie Jean King for Billie Jean the dog, who is still holidaying at the moment in Cornwall, as far as I understand.
Yes, she attended a fancy dress party.
Oh, marvellous. What does she go as?
Princess Leia.
Of course she did. Brilliant.
It was a Star Wars specific themed fancy dress party.
Right.
She was tired and she fell asleep inside my brother's Jedi cape.
Brilliant. Our executive producer is Chris Albert Lee, who also happens to own our mascots for this week. Matt, pronounce them this week for me because I can't remember.
Haider and Sommer.
Oh, fantastic. And I know they're beautiful cats who are quite partial to a hug because I've seen the photos and they're lovely. So, and I saw them in our newsletter, which you can sign up to, which you should sign up to by clicking on the link in our show notes on your phone right at the end of the podcast. And that's around about now because this podcast is over. See you tomorrow.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.